You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this wonderful podcast. And joining me for our weekly show, we're going down to these last few once-a-week shows, is Mr. Tony East. Tony, we're going to start with SI 100, but is there anything on that list that, like, surprised you? Just any player, any team?
This is the lamest answer of all time.
Oh, my God.
Andrew Wiggins is on the list.
He's 100, right?
Andrew Wiggins is the last player on the list, so that's the dumbest player for me to get mad about. But Andrew Wiggins is terrible. Andrew Wiggins is so bad, and I don't understand how he makes this list.
So I haven't looked at the snubs list, yes, but who would you have put instead of him? Just
that is a great question. I do have to do that, don't I? That's the rule of gripes, right? Fred VanVleet is substantially better.
Okay.
Justice Winslow, Whiteside. I'm just looking at the snub list. I'm trying to come up with guys that aren't even on this.
You don't want to put Dwight Howard there?
Absolutely not. Not Dwight Howard. DeMichael Green's good. It should be. Oh, Goran Dragic. Definitely.
Yeah,
Dragic.
That's the one I would put.
Yeah.
I would even think about, like, I mean, Aiden had a decent year last year.
Yeah, he shouldn't make it yet, but I think next year he's got a great shot.
Yeah. So, okay.
So we predicted last year. Last week.
It felt like last year.
It did. It's been a week, man. Who we thought would make it, where we thought they would be, how much they would move last year, and then which Pacers would be close but not quite make it. And before we get into how we did, Rob Mahoney, is the SI guy who made all this, was kind enough to write his own snubs piece and put guys in it. And we thought we were more confident Warren would be there. You know, he started in his career. He was really good last year shooting the ball. He's going to start here. He's got a chance to have a good year. But he was not there. But Jeremy Lamb is there, which I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah, because I think we both agree Warren is probably the better player than Lamb.
I think Warren's a little bit better than Lamb, yeah. I'm pretty into Lamb in general, but I think Warren is better.
I guess it depends how you're – because Warren is what, a negative? If you're just doing 1 to 10, like a negative 8 on defense? Versus, like, Lamb is probably somewhere around the middle for both, like, in terms of –
So Lamb actually – used to suck, like -8, and then I was reading about him for that, and apparently the summer before last season in Charlotte, he spent like every day with the Hornets defensive coach, and then last year he was okay and he actually like used his size. He was still probably like a -2 or -3, but I mean, for him that's a big jump. And I like what Mahoney said in this. It's like a lot of what Lamb is being here is just like he's like negative space. You know, he's good at a lot of stuff, but he's not quite good at the same stuff, you know? So it's like, okay, I can't put him in the top 100 because, like, what is Jeremy Lamb so awesome at? But he's not bad at anything either. And I get that.
If he's been working with coaches, it's exciting because I'm sure the Pacers defensive coach is going to love their hands on him to kind of – no, I mean, yeah, if he's a coachable player, that's exciting.
So I was actually hoping – because he's an awesome mid-range scorer, so I was hoping to find quotes about – from like coaches of the Hornets or the players talking about his mid-range scoring, and like everything that James Borrego, their new coach, talked about was like, yeah, he worked on his defense all summer. I'm pumped. And now I'm starting him. I'm like, okay, that's good. But that is not what I'm looking for. And it was like over and over. I think it was in three. I was on Hornets.com searching at the Jeremy Lamb archives. It was in like three different articles. So the Hornets were really psyched about it.
So is there a chance that Jeremy Lamb ends up becoming like the starting number three if he's just good at defense?
Yeah,
I
think it's unlikely but possible. You know, like he's only 6'5", right? He's not like
what is Warren?
3 inches on him, 6'8".
Okay,
he's limited, but he has a chance. I mean, if he fits well with whatever else the Pacers have on the floor, then maybe it makes some sense. But I don't like both whoever the three is, right? At a fully healthy team with Brogdon, Vic, and the two centers is like the ancillary piece on offense. And who would you rather have out there as like the break glass in case of emergency guy? I think that has to be Warren.
Yeah, I mean, we have to assume Warren shoots 40% again from three.
Yeah, especially if that happens.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to move to the actually top 100 list. So here's how we're going to do it. I'm going to throw it to Tony, who will say what we put for each one last week, and then I'll give out the ranking of that player. By now, you probably know four players made it: Sabonis, Brogdon, Turner, and Oladipo. So we'll start with Sabonis. Tony, where do we both have him at?
We had Sabonis right around Turner in the 45 to 50 range.
Both of us said that? Same thing?
Yeah, I had him higher than you did, actually.
Okay. So Sabonis comes in at, drumroll, number 76.
After being like 78 or 79 last year, I was surprised with how little he moved up. And I think, you know, the SI blurb does a good job talking about how he's, you know, he's a super sub, but the considerations they have there at the bottom, you know, accessibility of his game because he's not out there all the time is bad. And now he's got to be better in the playoffs and on defense. But I thought he'd move up a lot more than this because I thought he improved a lot last year.
So I would agree with that. When you look at the list, I'm not sure there's anybody ahead of him that I'm like, oh, that guy has to be behind Sabonis, right? I mean, right. The guys surrounding him are Markkanen.
Well, Tucker. I think he's substantially better than Harrison Barnes. But
okay, that's fair. But I guess in terms of total impact, though, Harrison Barnes has just a higher impact on
him. Yeah, that's a good point. You go through the guys in front of him, and none of them make you go, well, you know, he should clearly be ahead of that guy.
There's no Andrew Wiggins ahead of him.
Exactly.
I thought the interesting part of where he is, too, is where Jaylen Brown ranked, like 68, which means I'm just thinking the old, like, trade value days of Bill Simmons were, like
– that's right? Still happening, man. Zach Lowe talked about it, too.
But, like, how it's interesting how they kind of come in around the same value. I'll see what ESPN does. But if they're both sort of in the same spot, that might show why it's be interesting for both teams to want to just flop, like, basically flip for each other because it gives – to look at center and gives the Patriots a wing player. But besides that, I mean –
basketball reasons trade, right? You like that guy better for your team than that guy.
Yeah, just better fit.
Are needed.
I guess the only guy – do you think Thad should be ahead of him?
Thad is ahead of him now, and I think Thad was better than him last year. So okay. I understand it. But, again, this list is projecting forward, so you have to take into account potentially, you know, it's a bonus improvement, and it's unlikely that that improves, and Thad's probably coming off the bench too. So I don't know. That's an interesting discussion.
Don't call Thad old. His wife will call you out on Twitter.
Okay,
fair. That happened to me, but it's happened to somebody, I think. I saw that yesterday.
That's funny.
Yeah, I guess – I mean, look at this list. I mean, the only one I can maybe say, just is Trae Young really that high up yet?
He's at 62. It was good last year, so I think they're banking on some improvement.
Right, there. I guess. But, like, yeah, that's probably fair. But, yeah,
I'm
there's
not
nobody
so mad about that.
Yeah. No, there's nothing here that I'm like, oh, I'm so mad this guy's ahead of him. It's just
– yeah.
PJ Tucker seemed a little bit high, but I guess he's really versatile, and that helps. He's kind of a huge opponent.
He is perfect for the Rockets, too.
Yeah. So.
So, another thing that popped to me that's not – actually a Pacer still. Bojan coming in all the way at 52 was awesome.
Yes. So it's just some former Pacers, right? The only two former Pacers are Thad.
Thad and Bojan, yep.
And Thad came at 70.
Not on there. Tyreek and DC are out of league. Obviously, Kyle Quinn's not going to be on here. So Bojan and Thad are the two. But Bojan took a big jump. He wasn't even on it last year, and he's all the way up to 52 now.
Oh, right. He was on – was he on ESPN's last year?
I think he was like 100 for them.
Yeah, something like that. I think you're right. Yeah. All right. So anything else with Sabonis' ranking?
Yes, actually, one more thing. He is one spot ahead of Montrezl Harrell. And all these Clipper people last year were like, Montrezl was better. He should have been the second place for sixth man or whatever, the seventh man of the year award, blah, blah. I was like, yes. Thank you, Rob Mahoney, for putting Sabonis one spot ahead of Montrezl.
Please don't turn us into your seventh man.
I will never get over that. I am irrationally mad about that.
I know. It's like the one hill you'll just die on till forever.
It doesn't matter at all. That's why it's a fun hill to die on.
I think they're probably even players, right? Which is value
kind
of skills they bring. They're both kind of the same. All right. So the next Pacer on the list is Malcolm Brogdon. What do we have for Brogdon?
Home run.
Okay.
Touch them all, Adam. We had him at 60.
Oh, nice. So
and he comes in at 61.
Yep. So
very nice.
I think this is also a pretty decent spot for him.
I agree.
This is weird because one, you have Klay Thompson at 58 because of the injury, obviously.
Yeah.
Where he should probably be like, what, 10, 15, probably 15 maybe.
Yeah. If everybody's healthy in the league, he's top 15 or 20.
Yeah. But again, there's nobody where I look around and think, oh, that guy is worse than Malcolm Brogdon, at least in the next 5 or 10 on this list.
Yeah. It's a good group. And like some of them kind of remind me of Brogdon in that they're like high impact guys who can do some stuff like Buddy Hield, Otto Porter, you know, guys I really like because, you know, they bring like the highest importance of skills to the team and they're good at all of them without being a star. I think that means they're just like the absolute best role player you can get. They'll fit in any situation and that makes them so good. And you know, Porter's right here at 57 and Buddy's up at 54. Like, I think that's the tier of player that Brogdon is in, and what he's really good at are those things.
I guess the one I might say, I'm not sure Bojan should be ahead of him.
Oh, I definitely think so after last year.
I don't know. Brogdon, I mean, I guess I'm kind of being colored by his kind of a little playoff run that Brogdon had, where he was just really good in the playoffs for about 2 months. The Pacers got dumped in the first round, but
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like Brogdon has more of an impact on both ends of the floor than Sabonis has, I guess, when you combine defense and offense.
Brogdon was like the second best player on the Bucks in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, the second best player on the Bucks. Awesome. Bucks should be, I don't know, maybe should be top 50, but I mean, we had him at 60 to start. And I mean, the thing I think this list also shows is probably from like 40 to 70, you could at any moment could say anybody's better than them.
Yeah.
Player, basically. Yeah. I mean, there's some of them, like Clay, when he's healthy, he's probably better than all of them, but just every guy on this list has their moments where they're better than the other guy on this list. And so I'm not sure there's any, like, there's not a large gap, let's say, between the 40 and like 70 players.
Absolutely.
I'm interested to see, though, how Brogdon plays and if he moves up on this list next year. Because I think if he continues on the – if he was the second best player for the Bucks last year, let's say, and he ends up being the second best player for the Pacers and they make a little bit of playoff run and whatever, and could he be kind of getting closer to like the top 50?
Well, the way that Brogdon moves up is he shows off something new, you know, because
– some offensive.
Yeah, because to me, I mean, yeah, he can dribble. And I think I undersold that myself when I evaluated him before, but – you know, he's kind of been more of a finisher and just like improving as that secondary guy for forever. So that certainly could continue, but now he has the opportunity to be the primary guy to start the year. And I think that's how he'll move up, is if that goes really well.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. He needs to do that to sort of put himself in kind of that next tier of player, I guess.
Right, exactly. His usage is like 25 or 24 instead of 20 like last year.
Yeah.
And he's still over that as good as he was.
And I think he'll probably get more usage because they'll try to, definitely, one, not put so much pressure on Oladipo. He'll be spread on a little more, but he's going to be the second best player on this team on the offensive end. Defensively,
absolutely,
I think we can make Turner the case for sure. And that's what comes in on
this. I want to pull up the list of usage rate of players in the NBA just so I can give you all a relevancy for what Brogdon was around last year. So here's some players who have similar usage rates to Malcolm Brogdon last year. JaVale McGee, Marco Bellinelli, Torian Prince, my man Jalen Brunson. Like, good players, but Brogdon's better than them. So,
yeah.
He should
have the ball. But that's also part of Brogdon's success, that he's so good in the limited amount he gets, I guess, right?
Yes, he is. That is what makes him good. And the best players, right, can improve their usage and remain efficient and consistent. And if he can do that, he'll definitely move up on the list.
Because a player who probably couldn't do that was a guy like Darren Collison, who was really efficient and could play him for, like, that 15 minutes.
He is efficient at his level of do not shoot more than I already do.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to the second best player on or pacer on this list. Not player. Second best pacer on this list, and that's Miles Turner. Where do we have Turner?
We had him at 45, another good hit for us.
All right, and he came in at number 47. I think is a very, very fair point spot, I guess. I don't know. The only thing is I think Bledsoe – Eric Bledsoe's at 46. I just thought he was so bad in the playoffs. It's got to like kind of.
Man, he is so good in the regular season.
I know. So like that's probably he's probably a top 46 player, but in the postseason he's
it's
so
funny
terrible.
Because so 44 is D'Angelo Russell, right? Who was the last All Star in the East, and then 45 is Vucevic, who was the second to last All Star in the East, and then 46 is Bledsoe, who was the first All Star out in the East, and then there's Turner. So that, you know, that shows how close he was to All Star level last year.
Yeah,
because he was like one of the three guys. Well, I would have to look back. Some guys left the conference, but of the guys in the East now, he's like he's pretty dang close to the All Star level.
Yeah, he's borderline All Star. Depends on how many centers there are, basically.
Right. Yeah, and injuries, and you know how much does his offense change or improve, or is it the same as it's always been?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
Russell,
you know, he's right there.
Russell's an All Star next year if Oladipo stays healthy. It's also worth
mentioning. He's in the West now, though.
That's true. Now he's, yeah, that's true. But I just mean last season, that's how he got in.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's funny that those guys all ended up in, like, the same clump, though. That was interesting to me, just given where, you know, things shook out for them. And, like, Vooch was really good last year. I think people understand how good he was. To be only two spots behind him, I think, you know, people outside of Indiana really think Turner is good, and he is. But we, you know, you're going to ask. So we both know what his next step is, and that's – he doesn't just get reduced to the three-point shooter. You know, he has a little off-the-bounce game. He can pass a little, like, the stuff we see him doing in the World Cup, but against NBA players instead of against, I don't know. There's a guy in Australia named Tom Abercrombie, and he's always, like, the meme name I use when I joke about how players are playing in the World Cup. I'm like, oh, they have to do it against not Tom Abercrombie before I believe it. Really.
So you definitely jumped the gun on my question.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, they also say in the blurb is that if his offense progressed as much as defense, he would be way higher on this list, basically.
Yep. So we're actually going to talk about his defense later because he embarrassed himself talking about it. But, you know, he's up in the top 5 to 10 defenders in the entire NBA now. Like, obviously, yeah. there is another gear, but, like, I think the focus clearly should be on the other end of the floor for his improvement now.
Yeah, and my thing is he still doesn't have kind of a signature offensive move, play, whatever it is.
The pick and pop is as close as I can get. Does that even count?
I mean, that's a minute. I think that or just like a wide open shovel pass three at the top of the key, basically.
Yeah. It's kind of a move, I guess. I don't know.
I mean,
what do you call that?
I don't know. I call that standing in the right spot. Yeah, an action or standing in the right spot for seconds. But I mean, the good
thing. Then he always breaks it out, right? Like he has this one dribble dunk from the elbow or something. We're all like, oh, sweet. Like he's evolving, and then it's nothing. And then we do it again in a month.
Well, what also helps with Turner too is he's not like other centers who are really good offensively who just need the offense to like feel like they're like what's the right word, thriving, I guess. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Dwight Howard comes to mind as somebody who was literally if he just played defense and stood on the rim half the time, he'd be an 18-10 guy and have been the best, like one of the best 5 players in the league. But he had to be like this post up move guy. Where Turner is not a selfish offensive player, which helps him play into a system where if he is the third option, let's say behind a Brogdon, behind an Oladipo, maybe behind Sabonis, he's okay with that because he kind of derives his value from being a great defensive player.
Yes, exactly.
And he's okay with that. I mean, he's not somebody who I feel like is like calling for shots. He doesn't need, he doesn't need the ball. I mean, I think they should make more of an effort to get him the ball in better situations. I think that was part of the reason I just feel like the Pacers just kind of screwed.
Well, we've talked about how he's like sometimes better in rhythm when he's taking a bunch of more shots, but it's not all the time. But it feels like sometimes it's like, oh, look at this, like he's taking more shots in a game and he's doing better. What a shocker!
No, but to me, I also felt like they sometimes half-ass when they run plays for him. It's like, oh, it's Turner trying to get the ball. Let's sort of kind of set a pick, get him open for 15 foot.
Darren getting the ball. Yeah,
They're not. There's no like trying to get him at the best, you know, off-ball action to get him the best, you know, one-on-one on somebody. There's no attempt to get switches very well. Like, it feels like it's sort of like a, oh, Turner's taking a shot in this many minutes, or it's the first play of the game, let's get turn the ball and get him going kind of thing, instead of, like, drawing up plays that just they go when they need to. But he also has proven he can just, like, give him the ball and he can make a play at times. So.
Right.
It goes both ways.
I don't know if he'll ever be that guy.
No.
But if he could, that'd be great.
No, but, like, Sabonis is somebody, right? You kind of –
yeah,
give him the ball and stuff happen around him, and he has the 3 or 4 options to make, and he picks one, and then it goes well sometimes. Most of the time, that's why he's that's why he's considered a top 77
it's funny
player.
Because it goes well, or it's not like a neutral; it's like a big negative because he turns it over.
But that's a common thing, also just among good
it
players,
is, it
right?
Is. Among high passers, yeah.
That's like the Steph Curry thing, where like he throws 5 bad passes a game, but he makes so many good passes that they make up for the 5 stupid ones he threw.
Right.
All right, so. I think we both agree. Do you think this is the peak of where Turner's going to be on this list?
I think he gets like maybe 40, you know, 40, like East All-Star, low East All-Star level, but probably not that much higher than that.
Yeah, I think his ceiling is probably between 40 and 45. I think this might be the best it gets for him. I don't know.
Right. I don't know how he'll necessarily drop, but, you know, the thing about this is, this whole exercise is it's projecting to next year. And eventually Miles will stop being 24, right? So that's when predict a tiny jump or anything like that.
I think the next 3 years he could be 47, 48, 49, 50, just the same kind of range.
Right.
But I don't know if he's going to make the jump to a top 40, I don't think.
Right.
All right. So where do we have Victor Oladipo, the name we have not mentioned yet, who's obviously on this list? So we were a little bit off of this one, but in our defense, they put a huge caveat when they picked him. They put him at 39, basically saying that if he is healthy, he probably is the top 20, maybe even in the high teens of a just awesome basketball player.
Exactly. And it even says a fully healthy Victor Oladipo would rank in the 20s, maybe even the high teens in the blurb. Like that, you know, that's why he's 39, is because of the injury. Right between Steven Adams and Jamal Murray, which just is weird to say. But the point of this is total value. And I get it. You know, they completely left John Wall and KD and Boogie off the list. Like, they can't. There's no point.
Would he even have made this list even if he was?
He's better than Wiggins. Definitely better than Wiggins.
Maybe.
I have no doubt in my mind. I think Wiggins is horrible.
Yeah, but I'm not sure Boogie's is like anything good.
Not that awesome last year. So, yeah, it's fine. You know, And I guess it's like, I don't know how much they weigh in the injury, but it's like fine, whatever.
So if you're looking at the list, if he was 100% healthy, I think he probably falls somewhere between what Drew Holiday and Siakam at 24, 25 range.
That's where we were talking about him being, right?
No, like, I mean, if he's 100% healthy, there's, I mean, that's behind Bradley Beal. That's behind
so like DeRozan's 31. He's better. Luka's 30, better. 29's Mitchell, who is close to him, but he's better than Mitchell. 28's Lowry, who had the playoffs, but is older, so above him. 27's Middleton. He's better than Middleton, although Middleton was good last year. 26 is Conley. Now we're getting real close.
And that's where I had him.
And then, like you said, 25, 24 is Drew and Siakam. And 23 is Ben Simmons, who I'd probably put Simmons above him now. So this is good. Brad Beal at 22. I think when they were both healthy, that was really close. But now we have injuries to weigh in.
Like, yeah, so, I mean, I think that's the sort of – I mean, you could make a case that he was, like, really, really healthy. He'd come in, like, 18 ahead of, like, a Horford and a Blake Griffin if he was, like, had back-to-back awesome years. But factoring in – even if he's playing the full year, factoring in the fact that he has an injury history, that's where you probably would put him.
Right, like, so 25. He was the sixth All-NBA guard 2 years ago. And last year that was Kemba, and Kemba's at 20. You know, you could live with – you could be like 20-ish.
Yeah. I like how Blake Griffin's 19, even though his injury history is – I mean, he played all last year, I guess, but I feel like he's going to get hurt, right?
Yeah, he could. The Pistons odds makers seem to think he's going to get hurt again.
Yeah, I would bet money he gets hurt for – misses at least 20 games. I mean,
he was phenomenal last year, though. I feel like
– Oh, he was.
Like, given that he was fully healthy, you have to give him a shot, but yeah.
I mean, he had the best year of his career last year, probably.
Definitely.
Or one of them. One of the top three. Yeah.
He was very good. So my biggest gripe actually is probably LaMarcus Aldridge at 16 in general.
Is that too high?
Yeah, he's a good player, but like I would put him below that Drew tier we were just talking about.
I think mine would be Kyrie at 15.
I love Kyrie.
Yeah, but Kyrie.
A lot of people don't love Kyrie, but I love him.
I don't love Kyrie. I just don't.
Like, would you rather have Chris Middleton or LaMarcus Aldridge? That's close to me.
Oh yeah, that's fair.
You know, and Middleton's 27.
But like, I think I'd rather have Draymond than Kyrie.
I definitely would. They're two spots apart. I'm not that bothered by that.
You're right. I mean, I guess I can't find anybody I'd rather have than Kyrie. That's about high.
Kyrie's better than Horford, right? And Horford's 18. You know what?
Is it weird I'd rather have Bradley Beal than Kyrie?
Yeah.
So here's the thing.
That's a little weird.
No, but think about it. So Kyrie's big thing is the fact that he hit that huge shot, right? Which definitely is worth something. But if you put Bradley Beal on that same team in the Kyrie spot, would he have been able to hit that shot? Probably. Kyrie's allure that he's this great player comes to the fact that he played with the greatest player of all time next to him and was with his best teammate ever, basically. That's where he gets this from, right? He was basically –
I think some of my trouble evaluating – My trouble with evaluating Kyrie is, one, he's just a weird guy, right? Like, he's a huge weirdo, and it's so hard for me to step back and be like, okay, it's the basketball player only. But two, it's like sometimes he doesn't seem like he's as effective as we rank him, but then like the Warriors, the best team ever from 2 years ago, were like the only guy in the whole league they're scared of, or not scared of, you know, but like one of the very few guys in the league, they're like, this guy's good enough to beat us is Kyrie. You know, and like, I trust the Golden State Warriors evaluation.
That's
good
NBA player. He's probably the best player to play next to LeBron, and he's the best fit next to LeBron too in terms of just.
Yeah, and that's a skill. Playing with LeBron is a skill, and
that's why they were worried about him, because you double team LeBron and Kyrie can kind of is like.
He's legit. He was on the Celtics when they said that.
Was he?
Yeah,
I think they okay. I don't know. I just feel like part of his allure is the fact that he played next to LeBron. A lot of these guys.
That he has like sick highlights, like he's so crafty.
Yeah,
but I think he's. I think this is close.
But Beal's just. I mean, I think Beal's just. I think Beal's really good.
Beal was really good last year. I understand.
I think he's just a really solid player who like has been kind of in just like the crappiest situation you could possibly be in year in and year out.
It was a great situation until the last 2 years, and now
it's
a disaster.
We're like
a disaster.
No, but like I mean, I would say Kyrie has been in the best situation of. Like most players would just kill to have Kyrie go from playing for next to LeBron for what 4 years to playing with like a Celtics team that has a great coach and has all this depth and all that. So I mean, that definitely we'll see how he. I mean, he goes to another good situation in Brooklyn. So I guess that it won't matter. But
I hope him and KD tear it up. That'd be a fun team.
Yeah, we'll see how KD is. That's the $1 billion question, or the $1 billion question, really.
We are now off the beaten path of Pacers. But.
Yeah. So my only question left, Pace related, is. If Vic plays 50 games, or let's say 45, averages 20 and what, he averaged 6 and 5 last year or 2 years ago, and shoots 45, 38, and 80, and they make a playoff run to the second round. Does he become a top 15?
No. Top 15?
Top 15.
No.
Okay. Is
half of a really good player is not a top 15 player.
No, but going into 2020 or 2021, sorry.
Oh, do they, no.
Does he become – that's what I mean.
Probably like 20 – probably where was he in 2018? Like
20.
Like 20 on the top. Yeah, then like exactly 20.
Okay. I'm just saying he has like this great year to come back. He shows signs of 2017, 18, fake, like for a solid amount of time. It, like he goes in 100% healthy next year. So, I mean, does he end up – because I mean –
I see what you're saying.
I mean, you can make a case like a guy like Mitchell might just be 15 in the top 15 next year, for all we know, right? I mean, there's certain guys on the list who might just shoot up. Doncic should shoot up to that range, possibly. I mean, Kristaps, he could too. De'Aaron Fox. So that's who the guys he might be competing with getting in. But, like, I'm not sure that – I mean, you also make a case that guys in at least the top 20, like Horford could go down just because of age and usage. Chris Paul's going to keep falling probably. Griffin could fall. I don't remember.
Yeah, so, like, next year – the they don't include rookies, so like Zion could jump up and all the
that's true
sophomores could jump mostly, but yeah, 20-ish is fine.
But I'm pretty sure that the top like 12 is probably locked, 12 to 13, right?
Oh yeah top 12. Well, like, we're off the beaten path. Let's
see. Yeah, okay. Is there, I guess, the only thing I said, Jennifer, do you think there's anybody in the top on this list who could be in the top 10 next year? It's not, that's not in the top 12, let's put it that way.
In the top 10 next year, that's not.
No, yeah.
Like Carl Towns a lazy answer because he's at 13?
Yeah, I was thinking any guy, like, let's say from 20 down or something like that.
Okay, from 20 down, they can move into the top 10. Siakam?
That's my one I was going to say.
Siakam's a monster if he keeps improving at that same rate. Doncic, of course. Maybe I'm stretching a little because he's quite a young guy. I'm a huge De'Aaron Fox guy as well.
I think Siakam's the best bet, right?
I think Siakam, yeah, I think you're right. I think
or Siakam's Mitchell's probably second on that.
Probably the best bet.
Yeah. Mitchell's okay.
A very good choice.
Anything else surprise you by this list, Pacer related, I guess?
Not really. No. I know it's a boring answer, but like, no. I think Sabonis, I thought he would be higher, but that's it. That's the only thing that I was like, what?
So real quick, if you had to make a guess next year, what is Sabonis ranked?
It's hard because he's playing a new role and position.
Quick answer, Tony. We got to hit a break soon. Give me my answer.
60.
60. Brogdon. You want to say 60 55. Again, don't you?
55.
You wanted to say 60 as well.
I was about to say 60. You're right.
Turner.
47. That's not the same.
All right. And Oladipo.
28.
Okay. I think I'll go Sabonis, 65. Brogdon, 60. Turner, I'll go 47 on the dot again. I'll go Oladipo, 20.
What are the odds that we're going to come back and listen to this and check? Zero?
Zero, zero. If someone wants to tweet us it, so we just like take a screenshot and have it. But
yeah, pin a tweet. Yeah.
I mean, I can't remember the rankings last year. Really, I have to pull, and I remember what we predicted last year either. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break, and on the other side, we're going to do the Goga Beatriz Day season preview. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. Tony, did I get Goga's name right?
Was horrible. That's what I was going to start this segment and say, "Welcome back," where I will correctly pronounce Goga Beatriz's last name.
Beatriz. Okay, thank
you. Holy cow, man.
I'm not good with names. I'll just admit it right now. Not good with names.
That was something.
Not good with names at all. Just
so I just wrote an article about Goga, Adam, and I talked to this person. I have to be vague here. Talked to this person familiar with Budok Nas, the team he played for in EuroLeague. He sent me a video of the crowd chant. So there's this famous song called Sex, Droga, y Bodiroga. In Europe, and they renamed the song and chanted Sex, Droga, Beatriz, Goga for like 30 seconds after a game. So that's how I got to hear his last name and hear Sex in the same chant as his name, which was funny.
Yeah, that is. So for these player previews, we've been sort of doing the same thing, right? So we'll do for these
kind of look at last year, you know, how that affects their where they're going to be next year, then kind of project next year with a range of like worst and best. And then, you know, at the end, just realistic expectations.
Yeah. And these ones that we're doing in our kind of weekly show is going to be a little more condensed than our normal ones, which will be a little longer when we do those in actual podcasts. We're going to do, I think, Goga this week, TJ Warren next week, Brogdon the following week. And then we have a bunch of them. I mean, we're talking like Lamb, Leaf, Justin Holiday, Sabonis, McDermott, Oladipo, McConnell, Turner, and then Sumner and Al is a sort of the schedule. We will probably post a schedule of it online at some point.
Yeah. So we're doing Goga today. We did a holiday last week. I feel like those two guys could be shorter because, you know, Holiday didn't play that much last year. Goga didn't play at all in the NBA last year, so we don't have a lot of last year to talk about. But we do have some in Europe. So, Adam, the pop thing, if you just look at his box score, the thing that will fly off the page at you is that he took 93s and he had 36 of them. That's 40%. Only three centers did that in the entire NBA last year. So if he's going to have this massively positive offensive skill, we'll get to defense in a second, it's going to be that shooting.
Yeah, and he shoots the three better than most Pacer players currently.
Yeah, he can stroke it. So the Euro line's a little shorter, but, you know, he can clearly shoot it. There's videos of him in workouts.
How far is the Euro line, like 22 feet?
Yeah, it's longer than the NCAA line, but shorter than the NBA line.
NCAA is 23 feet. I thought the NBA is 23, NCAA is 21.
I think the Euro one's 22.9 and the NBA is like 23 point something, you know.
Oh, okay. So it's really not that big of a difference.
Right. And in digging for quotes and stuff, Rod Boone, he's the Hornets athletic guy. He worked out for the Hornets, Goga did, and Rod Boone asked him, like, what do you think your biggest skill is going to be in the modern NBA? He said, I think I can shoot really well. So I don't want to beat the drum of him just being a shooter because he's pretty good picking whatever player he can really and pop, but the shooting is apparent already. He hasn't even played yet.
Something else that you'll probably notice with him that is similar to other pitch centers, he does foul a lot. He averages like 3.7 fouls per game.
He is foul happy. Europe is so weird. They blow the whistle a lot. And
is it more? I was going to ask you that. Is it more? I mean, you know them more.
The possessions are fast, right? It's not that the pace is like so crazy. It's not like there's so much transition, but they shoot earlier in the clock a lot. So the pace is a little faster. There's more fouls.
Well, it actually fits in the Pacers because the Pacers used to do are big on that. Just kind of taking, if you have a good shot, take it. Don't worry about where we're at.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll fit right in. I mean, yeah, I was like Pacers' whole approach for 2017-18, 2018-19.
So what I started watching him at BMAX. That's the team he started last season with. And with that team, they were the team that, if you've ever seen videos of him or pictures, in a pink and light blue jersey, and it just looks horrible. That's that team. But he rolled a lot with them. He did the pick and roll a lot. He showed off some nice skills, you know, passing, and, you know, he'd switch on smaller guys and post them up and do some nice things. And then he goes to Budućnost and he does more popping. And even on the Georgian national team, he mixes it up a little bit. So we've seen him do a little bit of both, depending on what team he's on, which I think is interesting. And I think they can ask him to do either, which is nice because, you know, with like Sabonis can pop, but he never shoots the three. Like, they give him the space for a reason. Turner's the opposite. He very rarely rolls. I think Goga having the versatility to do both could be a weapon for him.
Yeah, the biggest flaw was going to be that him and Turner can't play really together. That's not his fault. It's just
probably not right away.
Because that's where you really get the advantage of him being a three-point shooter. Because, like, I'm saying, if you kind of sub him for Turner, he's probably a worse player than Turner, at least to start his career. But you get some of the same effects. But if you can figure out how to play him and Turner together, that would be like.
Neither of them can pass well enough, given the way the Pacers play with a lot of screening actions from their bigs. I don't think either of them can pass well enough to make that happen.
Yeah. But I'm assuming we're going to also probably see a lot of bench units with Goga and Sabonis probably.
Yeah. I mean, he's tougher to fit together than the other two, but that's just because of where he's at. Like, maybe when he's better, they'll make more sense. We just don't know.
Yeah.
Like, how the Pacers are going to want him to operate and all that stuff.
Yeah, another thing to watch Goga too is just his free throw percentage. True, I mean, he's got up to like 68%, but if he's a bad free throw, like, also could kill his time.
Yeah, that's his free throws are not great.
Yeah,
you have a valid point. Getting better every year though.
Yeah, so, I mean, just
by a substantial amount every year as well.
What was that at last year? You get to like
55.
Like, yeah, and that was like
my head. That might not even be right.
That was borderline. Like, you couldn't play Thad. Like, when you needed free throws, you sometimes had to sub them out for
a guy. Yeah, take them out of the game at the end when they needed defense and free throws, which sucks. Yeah.
But, like, I mean, it's a little things like that, too, that affect a guy like Goga playing minutes, because to get in the NBA, you have to do all the little things right first before you can make, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless you have some awesome skill where you could – I mean, he might have that where you could just, like, destroy players on one end of the floor. But considering he's not the number one, two, or three pick, he won't be given as much benefit of the doubt as a guy like – I mean, like, Ayton last year was basically allowed to do everything. Hell, he wanted
to. Thad finished last year at 64%. I'll be damned.
That shocked me.
Yeah, that shocks me. You know, I feel like I know most Pacers stats off the top of my head. That was off by 10%. That's embarrassing.
Well, and especially. Yeah,
so we're focused on offense here just because you can see these stats. But I just wrote a huge article. I watched a ton of him, like full games, which is very hard to find. Not that I need to hype up what I did. But his defense is his thing. And, you know, the Pacers international scout was like, yeah, he's super dominant in his league. Kevin Pritchard says he's a great rim protector. The guy I talked to over in Europe was like, yeah, it's his shot blocking and, his, you know, he just changes so many shots at the basket. And you watch him, and it's just incredible. His presence, like, not just around the basket, but, like, in the paint about where the ball is and where he needs to be to make the shot harder is very impressive.
You know, the interesting comp for this Pacers team, too, is the Hassan Whiteside, Bama Adebayo kind of 2 years ago. Last 2 years, that's kind of a similar thing. And I don't know how valuable it is to be really deep at shot at a rim. I don't know if it's – is it extremely valuable? Is it somewhere in between not valuable? I mean, I know at one point it was like – that's all you wanted, then the Warriors came around and killed rim protection, basically, to mean anything. So, because not a lot of teams have two rim protectors, so that'll be helpful for them, but I don't know if it is considered, like, if you're really good at rim protecting all around, it's going to make you, like, an awesome team.
And we know the clock exists on figuring it out with the centers, right? Like, Turner has 4 more years on his deal, and Goga has 4 more years on his deal, and Sabonis, obviously, is the extension coming up. By the time Gogo would have to be paid more if they get this extension on with Sabonis, like, they're not paying 3 centers what they're worth. So we know the timeline to figure out who's good, who's not, who can play together is 4 years. Now, I think it's going to end up being shorter than that.
But it'll end up being like February or next May.
Oh, I don't know. If Sabonis gets extended, it almost can't be this season.
No, it'd have to be next July or June.
Right. So we'll see. You bring up like other teams that had the situation, you know. They have a timeline to sort it out and figure that out that is different than other teams.
Unless Sabonis becomes a power forward, then it changes everything.
Then it does change everything. That's true. Or if Goga becomes a power forward, although I'm less
into
that. But yeah, he's good at drop coverage, which I thought was important because Turner is the master of that, and he can rub off some experience on someone who's already good at it, which is nice. I think that'll allow him to be helpful though on D with second units and stuff like that. Yeah, he just like pops on D. He can defend the perimeter a tiny bit, not well, but like good for a big man. So I think that is where he'll supply most of his value early on, is on D.
So not to get negative, what do you think the worst case scenario is just for Goga?
For him in general? I mean, I don't know.
Comes to America, eats too much fast food because, well, he's from Europe. Yeah. Now they don't have it there.
Al Jefferson and has Popeyes like every day, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess he's not like, I mean, that's the big thing. Have players come over from like Africa stuff, but they don't have, but he's from Europe, but they do have access to fast food, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't predict that stuff. Like, he wanted to go play in EuroLeague after to play against like better players. You know, like he just wants to I don't know. I feel like he has this drive to like play against better dudes and kick butt. So I don't think anything like that will happen. Now the on-court thing that could work is like his skills just are like a tick, not good enough, and can't get any better. Like he's already hit his apex. But I find it hard to believe that any 19-year-old has already hit their apex.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them not being good enough next year, but them getting better by year 2 or 3.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see him having struggles. He's probably going to struggle. I mean, every rookie does. But clearly the Pacers saw something in him that none of us saw, because was he even on our radar for maybe the center, because you don't do that anyway. But, like, clearly they think he's, like, going to be something awesome.
Every team
you
apparently liked him, but the only team that wanted a center traded all their picks, the Hawks. So nobody ended up in the right situation for it to happen.
Yeah.
Strike.
Okay, so what do you think he averages this year? Just give me a stat line. Start with minutes. Start with minutes played.
We said 12 minutes per game.
I think that's what we had for rotation.
Something like that.
10 to 15, somewhere in that range.
I can't remember. Yeah, low 10s. So, something like 4-2-1 or something. Something that's sad.
Probably more like 4-3-1. I think he gets a little more rebounds, right? If he's out there for 12 minutes, he
can get 3 rebounds. And he'll be the only big guy. Well, but Leaf's a good enough rebounder, right?
Like, yeah, won't he be at the rim most of the time? So he'll be the grab? I don't know. Usually, I feel like, what's the joke? Like, how is it, if you play like 15 to the center, how can you not get 3 rebounds? Like, it'd just be impossible not to.
Because you're not close to the rim like Miles.
I know.
Not that Miles is a good rebounder.
I'm not making fun of Miles. I'm just saying, like, as a guy who, if you play around the rim, and that's what you
do, it's just almost impossible. Yes, he's around the rim, there's no excuse.
Yeah.
Understood. Yes. Yeah, like Leaf stat line last year, basically.
Yeah.
3.9 points, 2.2 rebounds. I'll probably have more blocks than Leaf and less assists. Who knows?
So a guy made a similar jump, like Enes Kanter, his rookie year, played like 13 minutes.
I have no idea.
I'm telling you a stat line. Cantor had played 13 minutes per game, put up 4 points, 4 rebounds, and not even one assist. 0.1 assist per game.
Perfect.
That's, I guess, what was, did your one mean blocks per game?
Yes, my sure, blocks. He'll probably get more blocks than assists.
Yeah, I would say that too. But yeah, so Matt's a guy who just a big dude who was, came over from Europe playing center and was down low, and it's hard enough to get like 3 or 4 rebounds per game.
And then Cantor just took off.
Yep, had a great, like, what, 4 or 5 year run, and then
took him until year three, but he finally figured it out.
And then he kind of teetered off when the NBA became less about big guys and
he's
more about
good. He's, his flaws have been so exposed in the playoffs that
he's a borderline NBA player right now, right?
No, he is. It's just like bad defensive centers are running out.
Was he not on a team? No, he was on a team last year, but he got cut by the Knicks, or
he was in a trade. He was involved in a trade, and then
ended up in Portland somehow.
Yeah, he ended up on Portland. But yeah, he got, what was the trade he was in? I can't remember.
Honestly, I have no idea. I just know he ended up in Portland, and then he's playing for the Celtics.
Yes. Yeah, he's gonna start.
So any other predictions for Goga? I guess, does he shoot above 35% from three?
Yeah, about, I think that's about the right number. I don't know. Above or below would be like marginal to me.
Okay. So that's a good start for a guy. That Turner's first year was like in that number, right?
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits. I think him and Holiday could be a good snug play style fit.
Yeah. I think it could be
Aaron Holiday, to be clear. I forgot I have to do that now.
You have to clarify the Holidays and the TJs.
Yes.
All right. So for next week, we're going to have a TJ Warren preview. So look forward to that. That's the first of our, what, like three TJs previews?
Yeah.
But for now, we'll take a quick break and we'll talk about USA's loss in FIBA and do our football 5 minutes. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, Tony. So were you disappointed by USA's finish? Did you not care, or somewhere else, something else?
Well, I cared, I guess. I mean, I didn't really care who won. Like, it's the World Cup, but like, it's disappointing when the favorites don't win. And you know, I don't think they were like massive favorites. Obviously, they lost twice, and it was to the two teams that me and you talked about possibly being good. And the, you know, the third team we had was Spain, who won it all. So we're geniuses, of course. But you know, it's like when they lost in, what is it, 2002. It's like they had all these all-stars and other teams didn't. This time, like, the best players in the tournament were not on Team USA, so it makes a little more sense that they lost. But they have 12 NBA players, and no other team has that. So, like, you know, they shouldn't lose twice in this tournament.
Yeah, I guess. But isn't it fair to say Francis had the best basketball player on the court?
Yeah, definitely. Well, okay, so we have to talk about that now. So for those of you who haven't seen it somehow, I mean, I know it's football season, maybe you're not paying attention to this. Miles Turner, night before the game, or the day before the game, is being interviewed, and he's talking about Gobert in France, and he says, some people consider him the best defensive player in the world, apparently. You know, like the clear shot that, like, he thinks he's better. So you got to – if you say that, man, you got to play. And Miles went out in 10 minutes, only played 10 minutes, 2 points, 1 rebound, 3 fouls, 2 turnovers. Gobert was incredible. Like – the best player on the court, 21 points, 16 rebounds. Like, that is
26 efficiency.
Miles got embarrassed that game. And he did well enough against Serbia and Poland, like, to close out the week. But, man, that rung with me hard. Like, if you're going to – I'm glad he's confident. You know, if you're given the binary choice of, like, say confident defensive thing or don't, you want him to say the confident defensive thing, but you have to back it up, and he did not.
I'll tell you what, though. I bet Turner's not being invited back to next year's USA team.
I bet he is.
I mean, maybe invited to, like,
the selection round. You know what's funny? Not because he's the best player, but just because of the way the positions break out, he probably has the best shot of anyone on this roster of getting invited back.
Mitchell.
Oh, no way. James Harden, Steph Curry, I can go on and on.
Oh, you're right. There are way too many guards.
That's what – it's just because he's a center. If I had to pick a guard, I'd pick Kemba.
But couldn't Mitchell just have that, like, fantastic year and let's say, like, two guys don't play?
Yeah, and I wonder how many guys will play and not play next year. Because there's way less free agents next summer, too, so I feel like more guys will be inclined to play. But, yeah, this, to be selfish, people on Twitter have been like, oh, Miles should have won Defensive Player of the Year, and I'd be like, guys, like, Gobert was better. These kind of games, and people are like, yeah, see? Like, there is a tier above where Miles is. Not that he's not amazing, it's just Gobert's just better.
Gobert's on another level completely.
You can play your best game and back up your talk and still lose to Gobert, but you cannot get embarrassed like this. Like, that is not going to cut it.
Yeah, so the last time the USA lost, I think, was 2004, but the 2002 roster that you brought up in FIBA, there were two Pacers on it. Can you name the two?
Oh, wow. Reggie?
Yes.
J.O.?
Yep, nailed it. Nice job.
I thought that was like a trick question because you asked it, you know?
No, I was just curious because honestly,
Brad Miller's in there. Like,
I knew Reggie was on it because that 2002 one was played in Indianapolis.
That's right. But like, it was weird because I had like Wade and LeBron and some young dudes and stuff like that.
That was 04 they had those guys on. 02 didn't have anybody. 02, I mean, you had some NBA players that I think you couldn't even imagine were on this team.
Yeah.
I mean, I can read you the roster real quick. It was Michael Finley, Baron Davis, Andre Miller, J.O., Antonio Davis, Paul Pierce, Reggie Miller, Sean Marion, Jay Williams, Ben Wallace, Elton Brand, and Raif LaFrenz. I remember that dude.
Raif LaFrenz,
that's how you say it.
What a team, man.
Terrible pronouncing names. Say it again.
That's okay. Let's just move on to game two for USA here.
Yeah, so they played
Serbia.
Serbia in game two. Another loss.
They were down 32-7 at the end of the first, ended up only losing by five. So they played good for three quarters, but they played horrible in the first quarter.
And the other Bogdanović just carried Serbia.
The other Bogdanović had an incredible tournament.
Bogdan.
Yeah, so they shot really well from three. Serbia did. They're 15 for 31. USA, 11 for 31. There's your game. Like I said, pretty even over the course of the whole game. But Turner was better in this one. They gave him more opportunity to play, obviously. But, you know, he wasn't in foul trouble. 10 points and 5 rebounds. Plus 8 in a loss, too. That is a team high plus 8. So he was actually better, you know, having an impact, not getting embarrassed.
So
Jokic was amazing still, but it was definitely a better performance.
So to me, these two games, really the whole tournament, sort of showed how teamwork, chemistry, and continuity went out in this over talent. I mean, obviously, if you had like the immense talent, but when the talent is not in, like, there's no top 20, top 25 players, except for maybe Giannis in this tournament. Jokic, I guess you would say, is that way too.
Gobert
too. But I mean, Gobert's probably what, borderline top 10, right? He's probably in that 10 to 15 range. What was he on that list?
14 on SI 100.
So 14. But when you don't have like three of those guys on the same team, right? You don't have three top guys on the same team.
Right.
The same way kind of college basketball's come this way, where it's more about if you have guys that play 2 or 3 years together, they know each other's strengths, weaknesses, they play a lot together. Like, and that's a lot of these European teams. That was Serbia, that was France, and that's really Australia was that way. And Spain, these guys just
– Spain.
Like, there isn't Spain, a lot of change. Absolutely. There isn't a lot Argentina. Of change in their team, in their rosters, right? I mean, year after year, these rosters are the exact same because there's 12 good Serbian players, and they're all – maybe, you know, the 11, 12th guy change, but the top 5, 10 are always the same. They play a ton together, and the USA has kind of just kept showing each – as they played more, how really it was sort of like relying on Mitchell to have an awesome game, and he kind of did at some points, or having Harrison Barnes be good, or having Tatum show up. Tatum got hurt, so it didn't matter. But like, that's what it felt like, more of just like it relying on the superstar to carry versus like all the other more like team oriented, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. And some of it's like the best player on the court stuff that you even talk about in the NBA playoffs and finals. And like, Jokic is better than every USA player, and Gobert is too. And I mean, Giannis, with Giannis, it's harder because the rest of that Greek team is pretty bad. But the Serbian team has other good players, and the France team has other good players. You know, that's why the teams are so good. And that's why obviously, USA, again, if you looked roster to roster, you'd be like, they should win. And they didn't, and they deserve a lot of blame for this. But, you know, they're playing teams that are actually good. You know, it's not like, oh, my gosh, the world is ending. They lost to Serbia.
Well, and then they beat Poland, who –
smokes Poland, thankfully.
But Poland, kind of a surprising top 8 over Lithuania, right?
Yeah, they got – not lucky. That's not fair. But, like, the bracket broke well for them to make it to this point.
Right, because I think everybody thought Lithuania was the 8th best team, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Lithuania was 6th going in. Yeah, the bracket broke better for Poland than for Lithuania.
Yeah, Poland doesn't have a single NBA player on their roster.
Yes.
So
Turner with 7 points, 8 rebounds in that game. Hitting the glass a little harder, which is good. Didn't shoot very well, but the rest of his team did, so it didn't really matter.
So can I say one thing?
Yeah.
No.
This is a podcast, but no talking.
A podcast with my name as a co-host.
No talking.
I find FIBA, and I don't mind the World Cup, or not the World Cup, the Olympics, because it's just kind of a thing. But, like, for the USA, it just feels like a chore almost. Like, it feels like there should be some other implementation where, like, I've heard, like, the under 23 thing or under 25. Like, it just feels like right now it's like, oh, if I, all the good NBA players, the top 20 don't want to show up, then you're kind of just picking from this, you know, that 20 to 50 range of player, maybe even 20 to 60 range. And it's kind of like, these guys kind of care, but they're more kind of in it because it's like, oh, it's kind of fun to be on the USA team. And, you know, somebody like Thaddeus Young, for example, who made it to the final 15, right, like that, he was on the rock. He wanted to do it because, like, he might never get a shot at that. But, like,
right,
to be, you know, it's just, it was like, as a fan, it feels like this is, like, why should I care about a tournament if most of the good NBA players don't care about it, kind of thing.
Yeah, like internet, like, with this Team USA, so – like with the NBA, you get like all into the rosters and the teams, and they're from a city, and they play each other twice a year, and you and this and that. But then you throw together this roster of guys from various teams. Like in 2K, it's fun. It's a simulation. Like, this is real life. Like, no one really cares, right? Like, you're not a fan of 12 players. You're,
well, and even if USA lose,
but I feel like it was hard to get in. Like, I liked it because I like basketball, but I was like never like, oh, I'm so excited for this team or that team.
Yeah, well, even if USA loses. What is the USA not the best basketball place in the world? Like, are we gonna just all admit that? Exactly. All gonna think it's not. I mean, no, it's.
I mean, and you only watch to see Lithuania and USA because of Turner's bonus. You know, we weren't like, oh my gosh, I'm so psyched for the Czech Republic national team. You know, whatever.
I guess to me, I understand the idea that the top players don't want to play in it because it makes the playing field more level, which makes the tournament more fun. Honestly, I'm sure if you're just watching the tournament, it was probably much more fun because. Anybody, it was anybody's game going in the top eight, right? I mean, any of those kind of top 18 teams besides Poland had a shot of winning. But it, to me, I feel like for the USA, you just need some more, like, an idea of who's going to play. Like, we didn't know, like, it'd be nice to know, like, if I'd known in 2018, oh, this, the roster's going to be this guy's because it's all under 23, under 25, guys who only have 4 years in the league or whatever kind of thing. Versus, like, yeah, you know, we didn't know the roster till what, like, July, like, late July, early August? I'm trying to think when we officially said right. It. I mean, and you didn't know if this guy was going to play, and some players bet at last minute. Like, it just – it kind of ruins it. Instead of, like, looking forward to it, it's kind of like, oh, it's more like looking forward to who's going to play on it. What's – that's, like, half the battle for it, I feel like. But
yeah. And they were a letdown. They should have done better.
That's me on my soapbox. I'll get off it now. anything else with USA or FIBA or anything?
Not really. We might be talking about Turner next summer. We'll see, like – Drummond is the clear USA center number one, but I think after that, Turner's number two. So if they bring two centers, he might be there.
If Oladipo is healthy, I might be talking about him too.
That's true. That's another one.
All right, let's do our football 5 minutes. Tony, you are a Vikings fan. They did not win today.
No, Kirk Cousins threw an interception in the end zone, and that was that. They were down 21-0. They made a nice comeback, but it was not enough.
Yeah, unfortunately. I went to the Colts game in Nashville today, and hey, they pulled that out of their ass.
Did you cause the speaker fire?
No, but I was sitting I went with my dad, so we had nice tickets, and we were sitting like second row. I know. And with my girlfriend, and we were straight across was the fire speaker, and for a minute I thought, "Oh, the stadium's going to burn down. We're not going to
That was a football. Huge fire. I saw Zach Kiefer's video on Twitter.
Oh, it was huge. For a minute we were like, "Wait, what's going on?" And so the first guy had the fire extinguisher and he ran out of extinguisher and did get the fire out. Then some guy came running with a really big one that got it out. But like for a minute I'm thinking like this spreads to like the end zone, like we're not going to play football today cuz it's going to be a burned field.
That was crazy. Is there a game takeaway you have or you want to talk about Vinny?
I said one positive game takeaway is
very delete. Sorry.
No, you're fine. 2 weeks in a row, Brissett has come up big on a last drive clutch. I would even say, I mean, he tied the game last weekend with a great drive. And this one, both times the run game's helped him out big time, but he came up with a really big touchdown to TY in this game. You can say TY has been clutch too, but so the Colts seem to, they seem to be able to hang around and figure it out. Let's put it that way for the past 2 weeks, which is always good for, because most of the football is like, how are you good? How well in the clutch? And Luck always had a great clutch number, not to keep going back to Luck. But so it's good to see Brissett has some of that same clutch magic in him.
Yeah, that's good.
Vinatieri does not.
I
didn't watch
because I just don't. But I heard Frank Reich had a stones, a steel play at the end of the game.
Yes, they went for it on 4th and inches inside their own 30 or 40. Wow. And they just keep wasting to Brissett, just powered his way through.
There you go.
That was pretty good. But Vinatieri, I imagine, will be retiring, like you told me before the show, or will be on IR by the time we speak.
That's my official guess, just given the way reporters tweet. But that's how my information about the Colts is not from watching the Colts. My information from the Colts is I follow Indy Star dudes who talk about them.
So what's crazy, we were sitting on the visitor sideline and Vinatieri was kicking in this little thing they have on the side in front of us, and he was hitting the ball just fine. It to me, it feels like he just something, you know, kickers when they just start missing, they just miss like everything.
Yeah, some people call it a mental block, right?
Yeah, I call it like the yips, something like that. I think that's another term for it. But basically, like, it feels like that's what happened to him. Like, for, what, 24 years? How long has he been in the NFL? I mean, it feels like forever. He didn't have it, and he finally just kind of does. And it's I don't know. Right. I mean, I wonder if they give him one more shot because they're going to play at home next week. And, you know, that's always an easy place to play and kick the balls and Lucas Oil and get him some rhythm. But I don't know. His days – I wonder if they bring in a kicker and maybe go two kickers for the game.
So you said something, too, that I just don't know. First of all, his NFL debut, I was 0 years old. Like I was zero.
If you were, so was I.
Yeah, I don't know. You might not have been born yet. 1996.
Oh, you were 0 years old. Yeah, I wasn't born yet. I was
born yet, but zero. Probably. So anyway, I don't know this about football. So the IR, is there like a limit of the number of players you can have on IR?
No, so there's one where you can like bring a guy back off it. And I think that has a limit on it, but in terms of just inner reserve, no. If you get hurt,
so they could put him on there, right, and be like, okay, he's got an injury, let's get another kicker.
And that kind of could be the end of it. He just doesn't come back off it next year, but that's because I think you got to give him a dignified exit because he's a legend. He's the best kicker of all time. He just is. So
yes,
you don't just cut that guy. I mean, that's just not right to do that to a guy that, especially because he's been indie now, I think. Like, what, 12 years? Wow, it's been 12 years.
I've never
like,
done this before, but I just opened a Football Reference. That is a website that exists. His field goal percentage has gone – that's so funny to say in a football context. His field goal percentage has gone down every year since 2014. So,
but, like, slightly – well, some of it might go down. That's field goal because they moved the extra point back, and that's affected some of the percentage. But, yeah.
Oh, it is scoring. That's true. Oops.
No, but you're right. Field goal's gone down. He peaked at 96, and now he – in the 80s, but like even the 80s is better than most guys. I mean, that's because you never know how long
it's taking. He's bad, it's just this year it's been bad, but
like, yeah, this year's been
just going the wrong direction.
I mean, he's missed what, two extra points now, or three extra points today, so he's missed four total, three total, and two fields. Like, yeah, it's been awful.
Automatic Adam, I did not know that was his nickname. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, he was the best kicker in football probably from like 97 until like 14.
How many Super Bowl rings is he gonna end up with?
He's got one with the Colts and three with the Pats.
Three or four?
So four. I think he has four.
Wow. He's right here on the Football Reference page. Four-time Super Bowl champ there.
And he has the – I mean, he New England won three Super Bowls by a field goal. So, I mean, that's how good he's been.
Yeah.
He has some game. And he kicks them in the snow. I mean, the Colts don't win in 2006. He doesn't nail five field goals against Baltimore in the second round of the playoffs. So, he deserved a dignified exit. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Yeah, he told that, I think, Stephen Holder, right? That's the answer. I think I saw he told him that he's going to speak tomorrow. And Stephen Holder was like, you guys don't practice tomorrow. And he's like, I know. You know what I mean? So
I think you're right. I think he might be retiring, but we'll find out. By the time his podcast, he might already know.
Wow.
Two retirements in 3 weeks for the Colts.
If you told us, like, what, 3.5 weeks ago, like, yeah, Luck and Vinatieri will be retired by September 16th, you'd be like, what?
Two of their three captains.
Yeah. That's all. God, I got, though. Vikings, sucks to be a Colts Vikings, fan. Vikings kind of stunk.
Unfortunately. Yeah, sorry.
It's all right. I mean, the Packers on the road, it's like, all right, you might lose that game.
Yeah, they're 1-1, so. Both teams are 1-1, so it will be okay. All right, well, that's all. There's Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll be back next week with our other weekly show. We only have two more weeks of just one show. Then we will slowly transition from to three and then to five eventually. The season is really only about a month away now.
Only 2 weeks or something from their first game.
Yeah, from their first preseason game. So, yeah.
Two weeks and plus a few days, like 20 days.
We're getting close. I'm getting excited. I have been – it's been a boring sports.
Starving for basketball. FIBA didn't do it. You know, I thought people would do it. FIBA did not do it for me.
No, it did not do it for me either. Especially the China starts screwing everything up too. It's hard to watch in America. But
yeah,
it's what it is. All right. Well, you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at TCNBA, me at FreeMadam5. Tweet us whenever you want. Questions. We might take one in a show soon. We'll let you know if we do a mailbag at them soon. That is all for Locked On Pacers podcast. We will see you guys again next week.